All right, good afternoon, everybody. Are you guys hearing the echo back there, or is it straight? It's good. Okay, great. So only I got to hear the echo up here. All right, well, I've got a ton of content that I have for you here. I've been doing my dry runs for the last couple of days, and it's run anywhere from 65 minutes all the way up to 95 minutes, which is great for you guys because you're going to get a ton out of this session, but I have the worst job of the all because I have to fit that all into a 75-minute slot. So we're going to get past the five-minute rule for Microsoft meetings. We're going to go straight into the content. My name is Anthony Cangelosi. I'm a program manager on the Visual Studio Extensibility team. My team is responsible for building the end-to-end experience for consuming extensions within Visual Studio, all the way from consuming extensions all the way down to building extensions for Visual Studio. We own things like the Extension Manager and the Extension Manager services that are used to create some of the in-context experiences within Visual Studio. We also own the tools for building extensions inside of VS. So if you've built an extension, you've downloaded the VS SDK, we build those tools, the templates, and the project systems used to help make it easier to create those extensions. My team's also responsible for building the underlying subsystems that Visual Studio uses to discover extensions that are running on your machine. Now, if you don't know what those are yet, don't worry. That's what this session is all about. And we'll go through some of that content in just a minute. But before we get started, I want to take a survey of the audience to get a sense of where everybody's at. Can you raise your hand if you've ever installed an extension for Visual Studio before from the Visual Studio Gallery? Okay, great. Can you raise your hand if you've never installed an extension before? Okay. All of you guys who have just raised your hand, you have some homework to do. I want you all to go to the visualstudiogallery.com, and I want you to go ahead and download your first extension, because that's the only prerequisite that you have for this session to understand what we're going to go through today. So it used to be that when you built extensions for Visual Studio, there was a lot of overhead that went into that process. I started on Visual Studio on a team called the Visual Studio for Devices. Now, that team was before all the hotness around mobile platforms. We were building development tools that extended Visual Studio to be able to target the Windows mobile platform, the 6.0 and earlier versions. Now, when I joined the team, we had access to all of the developers inside of Visual Studio. We had access to the internal APIs, and we were the only ones that could build extensions for Visual Studio and build new capabilities into the IDE. Outside of the Visual Studio team, there was a very small select set of companies that were able to also build into the VS IDE. And to be able to get into that select group and to get those keys to the kingdom, you needed to sign a license with Microsoft, you had to become a member of a partner program, basically had to give away your firstborn child in order to be able to get the keys to the kingdom. And literally, there were a set of keys that you had to get. You had to get a private key before your extension would run inside of VS. Well, VS has come a long way from that world of extensibility inside of RID. Oh. Sorry. Apologies for that. You didn't miss much on the first two slides other than the title of the session. Okay. The story I was telling here was that Visual Studio has come a long way in extensibility. We used to be a very closed environment where only a few select companies could partner with us to build extensions for VS. VS has opened itself up quite a bit, and we've actually exposed quite a bit of our kimono to make extensibility open to anybody who wants to build and integrate with our IDE. You can build just about any type of extension inside of Visual Studio, from something as simple as a small menu that shows up on your command bar or a small simple editor extension, all the way up to your own custom private programming languages, as well as targeting tools for your own custom platforms, if you have your own devices and your own type of systems that you target. All of these types of extensions can be built into Visual Studio. Now, when I work at the VS booth, and especially when we have a VS extensibility booth, one of the biggest questions I get is actually not around the technology for how you build extensions, but it's the fact is whether or not you can even build extensions in the first place. So if you take nothing away from this talk over the next 75 minutes, but I think you're going to get a lot out of it, but if you take nothing away from this talk, it's that anybody can build extensions for Visual Studio. The only prerequisite that you need to build your extensions is the Visual Studio SDK. You don't need to be a member of any programs. You don't have to sign your life away through any contracts. All you need is the VSX SDK. Before we get into actually building our first extension, let's talk about a couple of the new features we have in Visual Studio 2012 around working with and managing extensions. Now, those guys who raised their hands who hadn't installed their extension, hopefully you've caught up to us by now, and you've installed your first extension, so you've caught up to all the information you need for this, the rest of this content. Now, when you install your extension, Your experience for consuming and finding extensions probably started around the Visual Studio Extension Manager, or the Visual Studio Gallery. Within Visual Studio, the Extension Manager is the center point for discovering all of the online content that you can get for Visual Studio. It's also the center point for finding all the extensions that you have installed on your machine. Now, the Extension Manager does a little bit more than just give you a link of the content that's on the Visual Studio Gallery. It actually filters all of that content down specifically to the extensions that will work with your version of Visual Studio. So when you load up the Extension Manager, it's only going to pull down the extensions that have been set up and designed to work with Visual Studio 2012. It'll further filter that content down specifically to the extensions that are designed to work with your edition of Visual Studio. So if there are extensions on the gallery that were designed to build and work around Visual Studio Ultimate and the Ultimate team features, and you have Visual Studio Pro installed, well, we'll just show you the ones that will actually work with your edition of VS. We also filter down the content to the localized versions of VS. This becomes particularly important when you have developers in an international audience, where we have extensions that are built for different localized versions of Visual Studio. The Extension Manager will filter down those extensions to the ones that work with your edition, and then fall back to English if there's no localized version of that. Now, the Extension Manager was originally built around this new technology called V6. And I'm going to get into what V6 is a little bit later on when I explain how to build an extension. But we've actually expanded the scope of the Extension Manager now to become the central point for managing all of your extensions. You can actually expose your MSI-built extensions through the Extension Manager as well. And we did this because we got a lot of feedback from customers and from developers who wanted to take advantage of some of the great features in 2010, like update notification. It used to be that you could only get update notifications for V6s. Now, with Visual Studio 2012, the Extension Manager gives you updates for all of the capabilities you have in your product, both for V6s, MSIs, and actually for 2012, you'll also get update notifications for features that you have in the product. Now, the Extension Manager is more than just a wrapper and that filter around the Visual Studio Gallery. Underneath the Extension Manager are a set of services. These services expose both the online content that's available in the gallery, that's available to be queried from both your extensions as well as from us within VS, and it also exposes the extensions that are installed on the local machine. These services give us the ability to create some really interesting in situ or some custom context-specific experiences within VS. So one of the examples of this is if you've gone to the new project dialog and you've clicked on the online tab of the new project dialog. Whereas in the Extension Manager, you get a view of all the extensions on the gallery, everything from large tools through to custom controls to project templates and now samples. If you go to the new project dialog, we scope that content down to just the content that's focused on you creating new projects. We give you access to project templates and samples, and we filter out all the rest of the content so that you can stay focused and get online content that will help you do your job within that context. When we released the Extension Manager in VS 2010, we got a lot of excitement about this connected experience, this ability to bring content down from the web. Individual developers loved it. They loved being able to pull all of this sweet, useful candy, get it onto their machines, and get the updates for all those useful extensions. But all of our development managers started to pull out their hair because they knew that they wanted to have more control and more of a central management about exactly which extensions their developers were using. A lot of teams had a subset of extensions that all of their developers wanted to use, a consistent set of standard ones that their teams have rights to or that they've pre-bought licenses for that they wanted to publish out to their team. Other teams had their own set of internal extensions that they built, internal extensions that they didn't want to publish out to the world that were specific to their own team development, but they wanted a way to share them out to their team. Well, previously, you had to put those extensions on the Visual Studio Gallery, and you had to make them available for all developers. Well, we got a lot of feedback about this, and we took that feedback internally because we saw a lot of developers were creating their own custom galleries around this. So what we did instead was we created the notion of a private gallery within Visual Studio. Now, what a private gallery in the Extension Manager gives you is it gives you all the same capabilities that you have from the Extension Manager, but focused on a specific endpoint that you manage internally for your own team. Now, you can create endpoints that are made out of either a standard Atom feed, using all the standard format and syntax for an Atom feed, or from a SharePoint list. If you use a SharePoint list, you just have to set up a couple properties on the list that you've created, point the Extension Manager at that list, and then Visual Studio will start pulling down the extensions and making them discoverable to your developers. So let's actually take a walkthrough of what it's like to actually consume a private gallery from within VS. So I have the RC here of Visual Studio 2012. I'm going to go to the Extension Manager. Now, we've renamed the Extension Manager to the Extensions and Updates dialog. It's still colloquially known as the Extension Manager, and the Extension Manager honestly just rolls off the tongue a lot more easily. So I'm going to use that interchangeably throughout our session. But the Extension Manager still has a lot of the same basic capabilities. You have all of your installed content available for discovery here, but filtered down for a couple of new content types that we've supported for 2012, including this notion of samples and SDKs. We have a new set of top-level nodes that you can discover, including the Visual Studio Gallery that was there from 2010, as well as the Samples Gallery now that's new for 2012. And the Updates tab that publishes all the updates for product updates within Visual Studio, as well as the Visual Studio Gallery and the Samples Gallery. But let's actually create our own private gallery here within this Extension Manager. To do that, you start out by going to your Tools Options, and you go to the Extensions and Updates node under your Environment node inside of the Options dialog. Now, before I get into the private galleries, one of the features that we got a lot of feedback about VS 2012 was we included this capability for update notifications, but we shipped it with it turned off by default. That's what happens when you have too many lawyers that give you feedback on how you should develop your features. You have to turn things like update notifications off. Well, we had enough feedback from our customers that they wanted this on by default, and we had enough ammunition to go back. And so now for 2012, you actually get all of your updates notified automatically. So any extensions that have updates that get published to the gallery, you'll automatically get a notification inside of the IDE. And we've also started to include a bubble tip that shows up in your system tray. It shows up about once every 24 hours to tell you that there are updates to extensions you have installed. You can turn that off by turning off the checkbox. So now let's go ahead and put in our own private gallery. To add your own gallery, you just hit the Add button here, and let's give it a name. Let's call it our Team Blue Gallery. And then I have to point this gallery at a particular endpoint. I told you we could support either SharePoint lists or an Atom feed. I'm actually going to use an Atom feed that I have on my local machine. But that Atom feed can live anywhere you'd like it to. It can be up on a web server, it could be on a network share somewhere, or it could be on any particular machine that your developers have access to. So I'm going to grab the URL from my private gallery, drop that in, and I'm going to put in the Atom feed that I have. I apply that, and now Visual Studio knows about this new gallery that I have on my local machine. If I go back into the Extension Manager, under the Online tabs, I have a new top-level node. That's all you have to do to get your users to now see a private subset of content that only your developers have access to. Within this private node, you have all the same features. You have the ability to do categorization, as we did with the VS Gallery. You can do searches across your gallery content. You can even provide metadata about that content, about the specific subset of content that you're publishing to your users. The experience for installing extensions is the same as it is for the VS Gallery. So I'm going to go ahead and download an extension from my private gallery here called this Highlight All Occurrences. And what this extension does is this extension is going to highlight the current selected word across all the instances of where that word appears in my source file. And that'll help me show you a little bit more about the code that we write in a few minutes. So with that now, I've got my extension installed, and it appears right here in the Extension Manager next to my other installed extensions. I can still disable it, I can uninstall it, and I can manage it the same way I do the others. And update notifications for that extension will appear under the Updates tab next to the other updates from the other galleries. Before I actually go and show you how updates work, I want to talk a little bit more about building extensions, because I'm actually going to ship an update for an extension that I built. So one of the questions that I get when I'm at the booth and I'm trying to convince developers to think about more than just building features for their applications is think about building extensions for VS. And I get this question a lot. Why build an extension for VS when I have more features to write for my customers than I have time to write? Why would I spend time writing code for your product when I can't even write all the features that I need for my own customers? And the question I ask back to those developers is, do you develop code the same way every other developer does? And the answer I usually get is no. Each of us is a little bit unique about how we approach development and the types of tools that we need to bring in to help build the applications that we're building. It's a very complex environment that we're trying to coordinate together and a lot of external information that we need to bring into our development process. And so VS's extensibility gives you the ability to customize the VS environment to tailor the specific needs you have as a developer. Gives you the ability to bring in outside information into your IDE. It helps you bring in outside tools into your IDE so you can integrate them and simplify and speed up the work that you're doing. Another common reason that teams will look at extensibility is to maintain a set of policies across their team. If you move between a couple of teams, or certainly between a couple of companies, you probably find that every team does things a little bit different and have a different set of policies on how they ensure that they're shipping the best quality code they can. Well, VS Extensibility gives you a number of different ways that you can enforce policies across your product. Project templates are probably the most common way that teams will do this. A lot of teams will create project templates within the new project dialog that are custom to their particular team's development. It helps give them the specific set of templates, the specific set of libraries that they want all of their developers to base off of. It gives them wizards that you can use to configure the starting point of code and applications that your developers are building so they're following the same patterns and practices consistently across your organization. Another place where you get to enforce policies and practices is through things like the TFS check-in policies. The TFS check-in policies give you, as a development manager, the control to be able to define what done actually means for your product before code makes its way into your repo. Now, how many of you in the audience have installed extensions like, say, ReSharper's JetBrains, or Telerik's Just Code, or some other productivity tool that you've downloaded off the gallery? A good number of you. Okay. Well, tools like these are entirely designed around simplifying and removing the repetitive work that we do on a daily basis. I heard a statistic once that developers spend as much time writing code as they do refactoring and refining the code they've written. So about half your time is spent just refining and iteratively cleaning up your code. And tools like ReSharper and Just Code and others help simplify that process and eliminate a lot of that repetitive work to help refactor things like your strings out of your classes and into their own resources, to do things like help simplify moving methods around, renaming and refactoring classes so that you don't have to do that repetitive work across your product. And all of this ultimately leads to basically higher and faster and higher quality code. Now, I mentioned fame and fortune here as the last of, you know, kind of five important reasons why developers build extensions. And that comes kind of as a surprising phenomenon that we saw when we brought together the extension manager and the VS Gallery in 2010, where we saw a lot of developers who had their own ideas about how they wanted to visualize code. They had creative ideas about how they wanted to simplify their development tasks, and they shared it out with the developer community. They put them out there, and some of these extensions have become the most popular extensions, more popular than our commercial ISV extensions, as far as downloads and consumption amongst our developers. Many of these extensions have actually turned into paid extensions and actually have become businesses of their own. It's been great to watch from the beginning of VS 2010, some of these community extensions that were free and freely accessible are now actually partners in our VSIP program and actually building businesses and have left their day job to go off and build extensions on top of Visual Studio. So there really is a lot of possibility and potential of what you can do with how you see Visual Studio extensibility. A couple years ago, we asked a developer on my team to go off and build a class map on a single page that fit all of the extensibility that was inside of Visual Studio. So he went off and he took a bunch of notes, interviewed a bunch of developers, and then he basically gave up and came up with this. We realized pretty quickly that it would have been impossible to get all of the extension points in VS into a single page in any kind of coherent, readable fashion. There's really an endless amount of extension points. Basically, every single feature inside of VS exposes some extensibility to help developers light up the capabilities within VS. Now, I show you this not to scare you away from extensibility. You certainly don't need to know this entire surface area, but to inspire you about the different places you can go to explore new places to extend VS. Now, there's a common set of patterns that people who are new to extending Visual Studio start with. They generally start with the shell and look for ideas about how they can automate and simplify some common tasks. So the extension we're going to build in a few minutes is going to focus on building an extension for our IDE as well as one for our editor. When I work with new developers that are kind of new to extending VS, there's a couple places that they tend to get tripped up. One of the places that they tend to get tripped up is trying to separate the features that they see in VS from the ingredients of an extension that make up that feature. As you look at VS, you see features like the Solution Explorer that gives you your navigation around your project assets. You have the toolbox that drag your controls in, and even the Server Explorer that manages your server endpoints. Now, all of these fundamentally, underneath the covers, are really just a tool window. They surface their own types of content, but from Visual Studio's extensibility point of view, the main ingredient there is a tool window. When you look at things like your XML designer or your XAML designer, even the Visual Studio editor, Each of these different types of designers and editors are hosted inside of what's known as a document window. And that's the underlying technology across all of them. The code productivity tools we talked about before, and some of the useful ones that are on the VS Gallery, take advantage of things like the editor margins to add adornments to the outer edges of your editor, to give you a visual indication of code changes that they've made, or to give you a quick reference to find and navigate your way through code for related context. They add things like adornments onto the surface of the editor to give you tools and capabilities to manipulate the code that you're working with. And they use tags and classifiers within the editor in order to identify common context within the editor and with common strings and substrings. Programming languages are basically the same across all programming languages. They're a set of project systems, language services, templates, and build tests. The project systems are what stand behind the Solution Explorer and help organize the assets that make up that particular language. The language service is what talks to the editor to explain to the editor, here is what a keyword is and how to do things like colorization and how to do things like statement completion. Project templates give you a well-formatted starting point, and the build tasks are what help your project system talk to your compilers so that it can correctly compile and build your code. And a platform SDK, if you think of something like, say, the Windows Phone platform SDK, is really a collection of all of the above. It brings in some programming languages. It brings in an SDK set of samples, some tools, to help make it simpler to target that particular platform. All of these capabilities are capabilities that you can take advantage of as a developer extending VS. So when you start out building extensions for VS, there are three main concepts that are important to understand: V6s, VS packages, and MEF components. And let's walk through what those main concepts are. Before VS 2010, we got a lot of feedback about how consuming extensions for Visual Studio was very unsafe and unreliable. If you'd installed an extension for VS 2008, you may have run into this experience where you installed the extension, and after a couple of iterations, it may not have loaded inside of VS. And it made the experience of consuming extensions very unsafe, and developers didn't even want to try it. We got the same feedback from the extension authors. Building an extension for VS was very complicated. There was a lot of different registration that you had to apply in the IDE. You had to know about special registry keys. You had to know about special locations, about where your files had to be laid down. And all this made for building a reliable extension very difficult unless you had the resources to really develop and test that extension all the way. So we took a step back and we said we could do better than MSI and all this configuration and registration, and we could take all that process away from the extension author and manage that for the author. And so we created this notion called V6. V6s are just a simpler way of deploying extensions that are built on top of OPC. Now, if you don't know what OPC is, OPC is a technology inside of Windows that is basically a glorified zip file. It's a zip file with its own custom formatted file extension. In our case, our file extension is a .vsix for our files. And inside of that zip file is a manifest that describes its contents that can be loaded in by the host application. Our V6s give us the flexibility to do all the same things you could do with MSIs. So they're localizable. V6s are completely extensible. So it doesn't have to only host the extension points that Visual Studio knows about, but can also host your own extension points. By packaging them into a V6 and using OPC, we're able to give users a simpler user management experience around install, uninstall, disable, and enable. And V6s aren't limited to just V6s themselves. You can actually take the manifest technology inside of V6s and use it within your MSI extensions. Now, while I'm a big advocate for using V6s, there are some scenarios where you're building more complicated extensions that do need an MSI. Say, for example, where you have some server components that you need to install side by side with your VS extensions. In those cases, you're going to have to fall back to an MSI for part of your deployment strategy. But you can still use some of the core technologies in V6 to be able to make your extensions discoverable within the extension manager and also to take advantage of the new update notifications that we have in the extension manager for MSIs. So let's actually take a look at the inner guts of a V6, and I'll show you what some of the simple parts are inside of a V6. So earlier I went to my private gallery and I installed an extension called the Selection Highlight extension. I'm going to create a copy of this extension here, and I'm going to go ahead and just rename it to a .zip file. Now that I have a .zip file, I can actually see all of the contents inside of my V6. Now, there are a few things that you'll find inside of any V6 that you open up. Perhaps the extension authors that are out there that have their extension on the gallery don't want me to share this with you, but you can do this with any of the extensions that are on our VS gallery that are V6 to actually see how they're composed on the inside. So any one of the extensions that are out there are going to have a few things. They're going to have a content types file. Now, this content types is required for the OPC format, and it tells Windows exactly what types of files that you have installed and how to actually publish those files into Windows so it knows how to extract them. The next thing that every single V6 is going to have is this V6 manifest. Now, this V6 manifest is specific for Visual Studio, and it's what describes to Visual Studio some of the basic information about your extension, things like the name, the version number, the license, and some preview text. It also defines which supported versions of Visual Studio your extension targets. This is how we can detect from the gallery whether or not an extension is actually designed to work with your Visual Studio and make sure you're seeing the ones that are designed for your instance of VS. It has this notion of dependencies and allows you to build dependencies across V6s so you can have interdependencies between multiple V6s and make sure, and Visual Studio will take care of enforcing those dependencies for you. And if they're not installed, we'll notify the user of where he can actually go and install those extensions. And the last main component of a V6 is this content, or something that we've renamed to assets in VS 2012. The content are the particular components that you're exposing to Visual Studio that you want Visual Studio to load inside of its IDE and be aware of. It's these content elements that are actually discoverable and queryable from within an extension through our Extension Manager services. So in addition to the basic components that make up a V6 extension, your extension itself, the payload, and the manifest, and the content XML, you can also deploy any additional supporting files that you need to have along with your extension. When you use the Extension Manager services to discover where your extension is, we give you a path back to where we've installed that extension for you. And then you can use that path as a relative starting point to load up any additional assets that your extension might need to consume. Now, the second concept that's important before you get started going off and building your first extension is understanding what a VS package is. VS packages are the primary extensibility model inside of Visual Studio. There are a couple of other ways to extend Visual Studio. You may have heard of something called VS add-ins, is another extensibility inside of Visual Studio. It used to be that Visual Studio add-ins were seen as the more popular or the easier way to build extensions. And that's because it took us a bit of time to get the project templates, the samples, and the documentation up to the same level for packages as they were for add-ins. I'd say that at this point, by 2012, we've actually reached pretty good parity between our documentation, and it should be about as easy to build a package as an add-in. And I generally advocate for people to start with packages when they're building extensions because you have access to the full capabilities inside of Visual Studio. If you build an add-in, you're going to hit some limitations. You're going to hit things like you won't be able to expose services of information about your extension out to other extension points. And you'll hit other limitations. So I encourage all developers to use packages as their starting point because you can get just as much done, and it gives you all the same flexibility that we inside the Visual Studio team have for building extensions. VS packages are the exact same technology that our developers are using back at Microsoft for building the features you use inside of VS. And that is, most of the shell IDE features that you use are built using packages at their fundamental layer. If you look up at the menu commands in the upper left corner of the screen here, the menu command system that we have calls into what's known as a command object. A command object at its fundamental level is a VS package that basically is a function call. And whenever the user clicks on the menu command, we execute that function call that you've passed us a pointer to. Toolbars call into menu commands as well. And toolbars live on your menu raft as well as within a tool window. When you look across the Solution Explorer, the Server Explorer, your class view, your property windows, all of these windows that are appearing across the periphery of your code editor are tool windows. They all have surfaced different types of content, but at the heart of them all, they're all really just tool windows inside of the IDE. Tool windows themselves are also built on top of packages. Now, a VS package is underlyingly built based on top of a COM architecture. It was well before .NET was around. We used COM as the architecture for building VS packages. But I don't want you to be scared away by the fact that they're built on COM for those who are more managed focused, because we have a set of managed wrappers called the MPF that wrap up all of our COM APIs, sorry, most of our COM APIs, with a set of managed friendly classes that abstract away a lot of the interfaces that you need to implement. We also have templates inside of VS that are built in both managed and native code to make it easier to get started as a managed developer. Now, the third concept that's important to understand a bit about is MEF. And if you don't know what MEF stands for, it's Microsoft's extensibility, it's the managed extensibility framework that Microsoft creates through the .NET framework. And I say this is important because MEF is the underlying extensibility model for the Visual Studio Editor. If you're already starting to think about some of the ways that you might want to change the behavior of Visual Studio, you're probably thinking about ways that you might want to add content into the editor or refactor code or change the visualizations on the editor. And so MEF is going to become an important topic that you'll need to understand about how the Visual Studio Editor uses extensibility. Now, MEF gives you a very lightweight way of creating extensible, composable applications. I think there are sessions that you can go to around MEF, but I'll give you some of the basic concepts that you need. MEF takes care of all the component discovery within your application so that your application doesn't have to set up hard dependencies between your extension and the host application. You don't have to set up configuration files because it takes care of all the discovery through its own composition. Contracts are defined declaratively within your application through these export and import statements. You define a set of exports and contracts and promises that you provide from your extension out to your host application, and you use imports to declaratively define extension points or services that you want to pull into your application. And that's all you need to do to set up those contracts between the host and the extension. And that gives you some additional flexibilities and benefits around using MEF as an extensibility model. It opens up, by breaking those hard dependencies between the host application and the extension, the ability for extensions to have interdependencies and intercommunication between two different extensions, so that some of those contracts and services that one extension might export can be imported directly from another extension without having to go through the host application. It also gives you the flexibility to recompose or create reusable code so that you can create MEF components that can be used in one extension and can be taken and ported to another application without having to rebuild any of the code. Now, the other concept that's important to understand about MEF components is this notion of catalogs. A catalog is basically your collection of all the component parts or the extensions that make up the extensions for your application. Now, for the catalog within Visual Studio, Visual Studio manages the catalog for all of its extensions. And all you need to do is expose your MEF component via V6, and I'll show you how we do that in a minute, to make your extension discoverable from within Visual Studio. So let's actually get through and actually get started building our first extension. All right, I'm going to close this V6 manifest that I'd opened earlier. I'm going to go into the new project dialog. Now, the story behind the extension I'm going to build is I'm going to build an extension that adds an adornment layer onto the editor and takes some information from the web and surfaces it to me, to my developers, based on the word that I've selected. We introduced a new feature inside of Visual Studio that takes samples from the MSDN code gallery and brings them into Visual Studio 2012 into the new project dialog. These are samples that are designed to work and load inside of Visual Studio 2012, and you can use these as a starting point for a project that you want to build. Now, there's a whole blog post on the Visual Studio blog that talks about this feature, but what I'm going to do is you can imagine that you'd want to have these samples discoverable in other parts of the product. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually take these samples and use the Extension Manager services to expose them inside of my editor for whatever word the user currently has selected. So I can start out building my extensions by going into the installed templates. And when I've installed the VS SDK, I get a new node called Extensibility here, which gives me some of the project templates that I need to start building my extensions. I have here, to start out, an editor text adornment project template. I'm going to call it my sample list. Now, what an adornment is a visual element that the editor puts on top of the editor surface. The editor, as you look at it, has a number of different layers, and you can put your own adornments on top of the editor that have your own UI components. And so we're going to put our own list box on top of the editor. Our list box is going to stay relative to our current text, but we could also create an adornment that was relative to the view of the editor. Okay. So the project that the template creates out for me gives me a few useful starting points. It gives me a class from my UI class, which is the main UI for my extension. I get a factory, which is going to take care of exporting and exposing all the capabilities that my extension has out to the editor. And it gives me a V6 manifest. Now, in a few minutes, I'm going to expand this extension to actually take in a second extension point. So rather than using the V6 manifest that's here, I'm going to actually add my own new V6 into this project. So I'm going to go to add on the solution, add a new project, and I'm going to select the V6 project. I'm going to just give it a name, sample list V6. And what I get now is a new project specifically for managing the deployment of my extension. I could have used the V6 manifest that came with my basic extension. And if all I was shipping was that editor extension, then that would be a perfectly good place to start. But as soon as you want to start to bring in multiple extension points, as I'm going to do in a few minutes with my extension, I usually recommend creating a separate deployment project for that, because it becomes much easier to manage exactly which components you're deploying inside of your extension. Now, the V6 has a simple designer that helps organize the information that you need to include in that XML file, so you don't have to worry about knowing what all of that interface is. All you have to do is fill out some of the properties. So let's give it a useful name here. The ID here is a globally unique identifier. We'll fill this in with your project name plus a GUID, but this can be any unique ID that you want to set up. It does have to be globally unique from any other extension that's out there. And then the V6 designer will also give you some basic IntelliSense or feedback about missing properties that you need to add in. So I'll go ahead and give myself an author. And then the version number is our version 1. Now, there's some other metadata that you can set up. We'll skip over that for now. The install targets define exactly which version of Visual Studio your extension will target. You can define specific editions of Visual Studio, as well as a version range. So we can say we support everything from 11 up until version 12. Now, your assets is the place where you define exactly what your package is going to deploy. So here I'm going to add in the MEF component that I'm building. Now, I could actually define any custom type of asset here that I'd like, and then the extension managers would actually be available to query these custom types so that I can discover custom extensions from within Visual Studio. But I'm actually going to consume here just a well-known extension point called a MEF component. I'm going to reference the sample list project that I created a minute ago. Now that I've got that set up, I've got all the requirements inside of my V6 ready to go. The last thing I'm going to do here for this V6 is I'm going to set it up as my startup project. Because when I go to run and debug my extension, I want it to run and debug this package, because this is the package I'm actually going to ship out to my users. OK, let's get into the actual source code for our extension. First, before I start modifying the source code, though, I need to pull in a couple of references that I need for the code I'm going to write. The first one is to that extension manager services that I've been talking about. So I'm going to pull in a reference to that extension manager. The next reference that I'm going to pull in is a reference to the shell for Visual Studio. This gives me the APIs that I need for discovering all of the services that are available from within VS. And I'm going to pull in the VS Olay interop assembly. OK, now that I've got my references all set up, let me go ahead and set up the using statements I need so I can get rid of my red squigglies. And let's take a look at what this factory created for us. So the template already automatically went out and created the basic framework for an editor extension. Now, what we have here is an extension that exports an IWPF text view creation listener. And that is to say that my extension is going to listen in whenever there is a new text view created within our editor. We can define with the views that we create, and we can set scope to the extensions that we create to say that our extension applies to specific types of content. You can think of content as a hierarchy. It's actually a graph because there's many interdependencies. But you can think of it as a hierarchy, where text being probably the most general type of content that's out there, code being a more specific type of content, and then C# and Visual Basic being even more specific than that. So you can say specifically where your extension applies. Now, you may have an extension that only works with VB, so it doesn't make sense to expose that extension to C# developers. And so I can set this extension to only be available when I have code, because I only want to do searches when I have code visible within the editor. The next scoping that you can do is with the role of the types of files that you have loaded and the role that the text view is under. Now, there's a couple of predefined roles. You can define your own roles for an editor. There's a couple of predefined roles that say things like, I only want to work with editors that happen to be in debuggable mode or could be in debuggable mode. Or I only want to interface with editors that are editable. I don't want any read-only editors. In my case, I'm going to work with any type of document. And what a document basically stands for is basically text that's being saved off to a file. Now, the second export, or the second capability that I'm giving out to the editor, is an adornment layer. Now, I mentioned an adornment was a UI or a visual element that I can put on top of the surface of the editor. And a layer creates my own custom layer where my adornment is going to live in the relative order of the editor stack. I can apply my adornment to existing layers, but I'm actually going to create my own layer here. And I'm going to give it a name so that I can reference it later on. I can define here an order. And what the order does is it tells Visual Studio what Z order I should stack these different layers on. And so I'm going to put my layer on top of and after any text that you see inside of the editor so that it appears above text and doesn't get obstructed by the text that's on the screen. Now, Meth is going to take care of actually creating this instance of an adornment layer for me, because I'm exporting this capability out to Meth. So I don't have to actually do anything with that here. The last thing I'm going to do is I'm going to import a service that I need to use to be able to navigate through the code. And so this text structure navigator selector service, standard Microsoft 50 character name, this iText structure navigator selector service is going to give me back a pointer to a service I can use to move around and navigate through the buffer of text that I have in that particular view. Let's go ahead and pass that off to my UI class, and then let's actually start modifying the UI for my extension. Okay, so I have here the factory all set up. Let's go ahead and set up the actual UI. Now, the UI that was in this template that you start off with basically does a search across the text inside of the view and puts a purple box around any letter A's that it finds. So I'm going to remove that functionality, and I'm going to build my own list view so that I have something a little more unique here. Okay, to start out, let me go ahead and add in my using statements. I'm going to need to replace the global variables here with a couple of global variables I'm going to need to track the current state of my extension. First one I have here is my IWPF text view. Now, the text view is the view of my model view controller. It combines all of the logic as well as the buffer and the data that make up the editor representation of what you see on the screen. So this is where I have references to things like my adornments, as well as to my tags and other visual elements. I can also get a reference to the buffer or the data text that underlies my editor. Here I've got a reference to that adornment that I've created. I'm going to get a reference to it in a few minutes. I've got that iText structure navigator for moving between text. I also have a reference to the text buffer. Now, the text buffer is your data that underlies the editor. It's the actual text strings or the stream of text that makes up the content of your editor. Now, one of the unique things about working with the Visual Studio Editor is when you work with content, you generally don't work with the text directly. The editor manages what are called snapshots of text. And these are snapshots of the buffer that snapshot the content at a particular point in time. So when you're working with text inside of the editor, you're actually working with a snapshot of it, and it allows you to, and that snapshot is an immutable snapshot. There are no changes that are being made to that version of the snapshot. So you can move across it relative without having to worry about the underlying buffer changing from underneath you. And so you use these notions of snapshot spans to have a particular point within that buffer, as well as a length that defines a range within that buffer of where you happen to be working. And then that snapshot span has some methods associated with it to get the text of the underlying string. And so I'm storing the current word of where the user is so I can track where the user is in my editor. The last main variable I have to store here is a list of the results I get back from that service call I'm going to do out to the MSDN gallery to get my list of samples. My constructor is relatively simple. The only thing that I'm going to highlight here from the editor is that I'm reaching into my view, and I'm using the get adornment layers to get all the layers, but specifically I want to get the layer that I just created in my factory. And so this gives me a reference to the layer that the editor created for me, and now I can use that to actually add and remove adornments onto the screen. I'm also going to listen in on a couple of events that occur around when this view has changed. Specifically, I want to know whenever the user's moved his caret position. And so each time the caret moves, I'm going to use that as an indication that the caret has moved to a new word, and I want to search for what that word is online. The other event I'm going to listen to is the layout change. Now, layout changes happen much more frequently and much more aggressively. Layouts can happen when I resize the editor, when I scroll up and down, when I minimize. The layout changes also happen when I add new text. So I want to scope my do work method here, this update at caret position. I want to scope the work that I do specifically to when the underlying buffer itself has changed. And so the event here gives me the ability to see the current version of the snapshot as well as the previous version. And so only when they've changed is when I'll actually do the work in the update at caret position. So now update at caret position is my primary do work. This could be whatever it is that you're thinking of you want to do with the selected text in the editor. For my case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a reference to a point inside of where I am inside of the buffer. So I take my caret position and identify a specific point in the buffer. So this gives me a relative point there. And then before I actually go off and do a random search, I'm going to look to see if the point that I'm currently at matches the same point or the same word of where I was before. And if I've only moved the caret within the range of the previously selected word, I'm not going to redo another search. So now that I know that I've got a significantly new point inside of my text view that I want to do a search for, I'm actually going to do a search for the word and get the actual text of the word. And to do that, I use that text structure navigator that I imported using the text structure navigator selector service. And what that class gives me is it gives me a method to get the range of text that wraps around my cursor. Now, I can get the extent of a word, which will give me the boundaries of a word based on some common boundary characters like spaces or other special characters. I can also use some other methods that are on here to get the entire parent string or to get the parent object around this word. Once I have my word, I'm going to search in the word to make sure I have a word that's significant to my needs. So I'm going to make sure that my word has at least one character inside of it. And then once I know that I have a word that's useful to search for, I'm going to call this getSamplesList method that's going to pass off the text of the currently selected word off to a web service to actually search for that word and give me back some results. Once I have some results to display, I'll use my displaySamplesList to actually visually display that content onto the editor. Now, this getSamplesList is what I use to actually consume the Extension Manager services I've been talking about. From the getSamplesList, there's a notion of a service provider that Visual Studio has. The Extension Manager itself is a service that's available. It's a singleton object that's available to any component inside of Visual Studio to consume. So you use the services provider to get an instance of that service and via the SVS service repository service object that I can store inside of my interface for an extension repository. Through that service, I can create a new query. With that query, I can define its order, its ranking, and its sorting, apply the search test, and then I can do my search. Once I have a set of results, I can display those on the screen. And I do my display by working with my adornment layer. I have my adornment layer here. First, I'm going to clear out all the adornments that I have on the screen. Then I'm going to use the view's getLineMarkerGeometry to get a relative pixel point of where my currently selected word is. Now that I have a point of where that word is relative to the text view, I can take the list box that I'm creating and set it relative to the bottom right corner of that word so that I keep the results that I display close to the word that the user selected. Now that I've got my list box set, I can fill it up with some content, and then I can add it as a new adornment and just directly add in the UI element right onto the adornment. So let's go ahead and build this and see if my extension works and see if it does what I expect it to. Okay, no build errors. That's always a good place to start. Now I'm going to actually start and run my extension. Now, if I had run this extension and I installed it into my developer instance and it didn't work, I could end up in a really bad state. I could end up in a point where I potentially couldn't even start up my VS IDE instance. And so what we do is when we start up and you're building extensions for VS, we deploy those extensions into their own experimental instance. And if you look up here, you'll see that the title bar says that you are in an experimental instance of Visual Studio. What this is Visual Studio running out of a completely separate hive. So you have all of your own independent settings, your own configurations, your own set of extensions that are installed to there. Everything is isolated from your development environment so that you can test and experiment with your extension and discover whether or not it works before you actually install it on your local machine. So I've got my extension loaded here. Let's load up a solution that I have loaded here, and let's see if my extension works. I can move around my code, and I should be able to click into my editor. And each time I click into the editor, I should be able to get a list of results that come back from the MSDN code gallery that match this particular word. So with these results, I can actually now see, okay, based on the tools window pane object, let's actually see some samples online that map to the tools windows pane object. I can read about this sample, learn about it, and then download it and work with it. Okay, great. So my extension is working. Let's actually ship this extension out to my users. Now, I could take that V6 that I've built. Let's go out to my project output folder. It gets deployed into the build debug of my project. I take this V6 and I can upload it to the Visual Studio Gallery and share it out with the world. Now, Microsoft has a whole bunch of rules around deploying extensions, so I'm not going to do that. But instead, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to deploy it into my private gallery for my private subset of users. So I'm going to take that extension here, and I'm going to move it over to the private gallery that I have here. And I have just a small set of relative folders set up, and I'm going to put it inside of my coding folder next to those other extensions. The next thing I'm going to do here is I'm going to take that Atom file that I had imported earlier, and I'm actually going to change it and update it to become aware of this new extension. Now, this is a standard format Atom file. We try to reuse all of the same tags that are in a standard Atom format so that you can use any kind of Atom library that's out there for manipulating and updating this feed with your own set of extensions. I'm going to create a copy of this entry tag here. and replace it with some new string, with some new information. So the first thing I need to grab is the extension ID for my extension. That's this unique identifier that we auto-generated for our users. I put that here, and I'm going to put my ID here in the ID for the atom file. Let's give this atom file now its own name. Let's replace this description with something a little bit more useful. And then the next thing I'm going to change here is the relative path of where that extension lives relative to my atom feed. So this lives inside of the coding folder, and it's called the sample list v6. I've got my ID all set up. The last thing I need to change here is my version number so that it matches the version number inside of my v6. Now that I've got my entry set up, I can save that file. And if I go back into the tools extension manager, into my private gallery, I should see now that I have a new extension available. My extension is available for me to actually install into my local instance using a v6. I should restart with VS, and I should have my extension loaded. So I've deployed this extension out to my users. Nope, sorry. That wasn't intended. Let's close that. Restarts of VS usually solve that problem. OK, so let's see if my extension is loading. If I actually select a particular word inside of a code file, great. So I've got my extension loaded inside of my main instance here. Now, the extension that I created is a little aggressive on how it works. It goes and it does a query out to a web service call every time I click across the editor, which is a little inefficient. Now, I did that on purpose because I want to demonstrate one of the next confusing topics that gets a little flustering when you're building extensions. And that is how you take two different extension points inside of Visual Studio and bring them together and deploy them together as a single extension. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to actually put this web service call behind a menu command, which is a VS package, not a MEF component. So let me first unload this extension so that I can actually type a little bit more freely here. And I can actually disable this extension, but keep it installed. So Visual Studio will keep the extension on my machine, but it won't actually load it into my editor. Now I can keep moving around a little bit more freely. OK, great. So let's go ahead and add a new project into this solution. First, I'm going to go back into the new project dialog and add a new project. But this time, instead of a MEF component, I'm going to add a VS package. Let's call this package our sample menu command. And the VS package takes me through a wizard to help me set up my first VS package. I can select any of the programming languages that I'd like that VS supports, or at least the main languages. I can set some metadata up about my extension, but I've already got that managed through my v6. And then I can choose the type of extension that I want to build in my VS package. These are three of the most common types of extensions, and the wizard helps build the code that you need to actually consume these extensions. So let's go ahead and set up our menu command. I'm going to give it a name. So this is the name that will appear up on the Tools menu. And I'm actually going to uncheck these two projects. Now, these two projects are actually very useful, and I'd encourage you to use them, because what these projects give you is they actually give you a set of mock objects that you can use so that you can deploy your extension into your build environment and test it using unit tests without actually having a running instance of VS on the machine. But to speed up the creation of my projects, I'm actually going to remove them for now. And now I have all the components that I need for building my menu command. Before I go and build my menu command, though, I want to tell that v6 that I created earlier that, hey, there's this new component that I need you to ship with your extension. So let's go ahead and modify that v6 manifest again. If I go into the assets section here, I can add a new asset. And this time, instead of adding a MEF component, I'm going to add a VS package. I can add a new project I'm going to take it from a project in my solution, and I'm going to select that menu command. The other change that I need to make inside of this v6 is I have a new version, so I need to update the version number. And this is the primary key that Visual Studio uses to determine whether or not, given an extension that a user has installed, whether or not we should notify you about an update that's coming down from the Visual Studio gallery or from one of your private galleries. Now that I've got my v6 all set up, let's go back to our projects. Now, one of the differences between our VS packages that we set up from the MEF components is the VS package project template actually enforces a strong name signing with the package that it creates. So in order for me to have a strong name signed assembly together with other assemblies, I need to make sure all of them are signed together. So I need to go back to my MEF component into its properties, and I need to tell this assembly to be signed using the same key that my VS package created. If I go into my project folder, I can open up that sample menu command, and a key was generated for me here. All I have to do is reference that, and I'm set for my strong name signing. Okay, now, inside of my menu command, inside of my package, I have a few interesting files. The first one is our VSCT file. What the VSCT file is, it tells Visual Studio exactly which menu items you're exposing out into the IDE. Now, a menu item lives inside of what's known as a group. A group has a parent. And so our menu item is going to live inside of this custom group called My Menu Group, and we're going to associate that group with the menu toolbar or the tools menu in the main toolbar of our IDE. The template takes care of creating this for you, so there's no changes that we need to make here unless I wanted to move my command to some other part of the IDE. This template does create a V6 manifest if I wanted to isolate to just this extension, but as I said, I have two different extension points. So I have my main V6 here that's controlling all of my deployment. And the last part of this is our package class here, which is all of our source code. Before I actually go and modify that code, though, I'm going to pull in a couple references I need. First, I'm going to take a reference to that MEF component, because I'm actually going to call into that MEF component to actually execute when that search happens. The next one that I'm going to pull in is a reference to the text manager, which is in the Visual Studio editor assemblies. And this text manager is going to help me get a reference to the current view. And the last thing that I'm going to pull in is the text.ui.wpf, which is going to give me the interfaces I need for working with the Visual Studio WPF editor. Okay, so now that I have my references in place, let's actually start modifying our package. Now, the package that's pre-built comes with a bunch of documentation right in the code for you. So it explains for you what a lot of these different attributes are that apply to creating a VS package. One of the main attributes that you'll need to know about is this provide menu resources. That it says that this class is associated with that command table that I showed you earlier. The next common part of a package is the initialization steps. Here is where you take the steps of when your package is loaded to say that you have your own menu command that you want to expose out through your own command that you want to expose out through a menu. And here's the callback that you want Visual Studio to call into whenever your menu is executed. Your menu item that then gets added to the Ole menu command service, so Visual Studio knows about your menu whenever the user clicks on it. Now, the template builds out a callback for you here that does some basic code. All it does is it shows a toolbox whenever the user's clicked on that menu command. So let's actually remove that, and let's add some code here that's going to actually execute into my MEF component. So here I've got the code that's going to load up my MEF component, but let me get rid of some of those squigglies. And so what this is doing now is I'm first getting a reference. Again, I'm using this get services notion. There's a service within Visual Studio that's specifically our text manager service. With that reference to a text manager service, I'm able to identify what the current active view is. I want to know what the editor view is that's in front of my user at this point of time so that I can provide just a menu command or just the visualization on top of that editor view. If I have an instance, or if the editor that's open at that point happens to be a Visual Studio WPF editor, then I can cast that to an iUser data object, and then from that extract out the text view host for that object. Once I have the view host, I'm going to pass that into my MEF component. That's the sample list factory that we created earlier. And I'm going to call a new method I'm about to add called execute. So let's go into our factory now, and let's add in that execute method. Okay, so my execute method is relatively simple. There's not a lot to it. We take in our view host, and then instead of having the layout changes actually call our do work method, we're going to call that do work method here directly. We're going to call our update at caret position. So each time this execute method is called, we'll actually do the work rather than doing it on the layout changes. The other change I'm going to make is rather than have my UI instantiated every single time that my extension is exported, I only want to have one instance of that extension created. So I'm going to modify this to use a new create method, which will create a singleton object that I'll associate with my current view. Now let's go back to our factory. So now we're done with our factory, let's go into our UI. I have to add in now that create method that I created. And what create does is it delegates the instantiation of that class off to a method called getterCreateSingletonProperty. So my UI class gets associated with the view of the editor. The next change I'm going to do is I'm going to make my class private here, because I only want my singleton object to be created. And then I have one more change I need to make inside of my factory here. I'm calling into this factory from another assembly, so I need to make this public and visible to that VS package. OK, so we've built there. I don't have any compile errors. Let's go ahead and test this again in the experimental instance before we deploy it out to our users. Load up VS, and let's go back to our solution. I should now be able to move around my code without that extension loading up anywhere in the IDE. OK. I think that two extensions got deployed. Yep. OK, we have two extensions installed at the same time into our experimental instance. There's a quick way to solve that problem. I can go ahead and I can reset my experimental instance. Let's close down VS. And so the SDK gives you a useful tool for cleaning out your experimental instance when it gets in a bad environment. This wasn't part of the demo, but it makes for showing you yet another feature of the SDK. Let's go ahead and rebuild our extension. Once that extension builds, let's go ahead and run it out in the experimental instance. Hopefully this time it's cleared out the cache for that other extension that we had hanging around. Now, when you reset your extension manager for the first time, VS has to go back out and rediscover all the extensions that are out there. So there is this kind of cold start phase that happens the first time you reset extensions. And nope, we're still getting our extension deployed because it's deploying it based on my current instance. So I'm going to skip past this. Let's actually, my extension does have a new command here inside of the tool window. And this also executes out my command. OK, so let's actually deploy this out to my VS Gallery. So I'm going to go back now to the deployment project that I had here. This project was just rebuilt, and it has all of the assemblies. It now has the menu command that I created. It also has the UI editor extension. Let's copy this into our deployment directory for our private gallery. And I'm going to replace the extension that I had here. The next thing I need to do is I need to go back to that private gallery XML file and tell the gallery that there is an updated version of my extension. So I'm going to map this to the new version of my extension. Changing the version number there should actually give me an update notification inside of the extension manager telling me that there is now a new update inside of my Team Blue gallery for that extension that I can consume. Hitting update here is going to go ahead and install and replace the extension that I have on my machine. And when I restart VS in my deployed version, now I should actually have a separate version here that I can run off of. And I should also get, under the tools menu here, that find samples list. OK, so what can we do with these extensions? Before we go forward, so what we covered here was basically taking the Visual Studio SDK, we built an editor extension using a MEF component part that got loaded into our editor. That editor extension had an adornment inside of it that we used to put a list box onto the screen. We then took that editor extension and we used a VS package to create a menu command. And that menu command then called into our MEF component to actually load that list box each time the menu command was clicked. So where can you take these extensions? One of the questions I get once people are building up extensions is where will extensions work and what types of Visual Studio editions? So we have Express editions of Visual Studio, and we have the Pro, Premium, and Ultimate editions. And so I tend to break them into two large categories, content and capabilities. If you think about content as things like project templates, controls, NuGets, extension SDKs, all of these extensions will load up, and you can build these types of extensions for Express editions of Visual Studio. On the Pro side of things is where you can actually deploy capabilities, like the extensions I showed you here, editor extensions, shell extensions, project systems, and pretty much any capability that you can build inside of VS can be loaded into the Pro, Premium, or Ultimate editions of VS. OK, so you've got your great idea of the extensions you've built, and you want to actually start shipping them and selling them to developers. The VSIP program is still around. This used to be the program you had to join to get the rights to build extensions for VS. It still lives on as a program that gives you some marketing benefits now and technical benefits for ISVs that are building commercial extensions of VS. It's the program that we use to work with the folks like ReSharper, the folks like JetBrains, the Telerix, Component One, and all those guys to help make sure that their extensions work with the latest version of Visual Studio. We work very closely with these partners through things like developer clinics, and we have developer summits where we introduce some of the latest technology coming out for Visual Studio so that these partners can get their extensions ready to actually sim ship with Visual Studio. And so all the folks that you see on the screen here actually have all of their extensions working at the same time as we release our Visual Studio versions through the help that we do in the VSIP program. Now, there are a couple tools that you'll need to get started building your extensions. First, it's the SDK. We have a learning center that's built around extensibility. It has videos, walkthroughs, how do I videos. It also has a set of library content and documentation on building extensions. And all the information that I've shared here is available through these online resources. The VSIP program is available for any companies that actually need the services that they provide. And there's a couple of sessions that unfortunately happened before mine, but if you go and review them online, you'll actually see even more ways that you can actually build extensions for Visual Studio. You've probably seen this slide a couple of times, so I'm going to skip past it. And just say that the TechEd has its own set of resources that you can pull down. There's the MSDN library, the TechNet, and ComNet. If you haven't seen some of the other sessions I've referenced, you can go and pull those down from TechEd afterwards. Please do review those. And then last, but most importantly, actually, for me, is surveys and feedback. I hope you found some of the information that we've shared here useful. If you found any of it useful, please do give me feedback. I'd love to hear about which parts of the session were really good and were applicable. And if there are any things that I can do better or pieces of information that you want to learn about more, do feel free to add that into the comments. I do read all of those comments. And if you do want me to get in touch with you, that's a great place to put your email address and let me know that you want me to reach out. I can always answer questions through that as well. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. And if you have any questions, I'll be up here to take any questions on stage.